వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా. శివశక్త్యా యుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి. అత స్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday morning on the 6th of February 2020, and you with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam. Let me as always first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What is the gradual progress in mental attitude we must attain? Let us listen to Bhagwan's pearls of wisdom today, and I quote: "The attitude of the worshipper and the worshipped is the seed of devotion or bhakti. First, the worshipper's mind is attracted by special qualities of the object of worship. The worshipper tries to acquire these special qualities. This is the spiritual discipline or sadhana. In the early stages of sadhana, the distinction between worshipper and worshipped is full, but as the spiritual discipline progresses, this feeling diminishes, and when attainment is reached, there is no distinction whatsoever. Whatever be the object of worship one has grasped and loved and sought by spiritual discipline, one should have firm faith that the individual self or jivatma is the Supreme Lord, the Paramatma. There is only one wish fit to be entertained by the aspirant, the realization of the Lord or Ishvara Sakshatkara. There is no room in the mind for any other wish." Unquote. This was taken from Prema Vahini, Chapter 39. Dear listener, today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the sixth part of a Tryst with Divinity conversation with Professor N. Nanjundaya, a long-standing devotee of Bhagwan and the former controller of examinations, Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. First, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Later at 11:30, Bishu will join you with his segment Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And here is Divine Glory for your listening pleasure.
Chapter 49 Stories of Hari Kanoba, Somdev Swami, Nana Saheb Chandorkar. Preliminary. When even the Vedas and the Puranas cannot sufficiently praise Brahma or the Sadguru, then how can we, the ignorant, describe our Sadguru, Sri Sai Baba? We think it is better for us to keep quiet in this matter. In reality, the observance of the vow of silence is the best way of praising the Sadguru, but the divine qualities of Sai Baba make us forget our vow of silence and inspire us to open our mouth. Tasteful dishes lose their taste if there is no company of friends and relatives to partake the dishes with us. But when they join us, the dishes acquire additional flavor. The same is the case with Sai Leela Amrit, the nectar in the form of Sai's Leelas. This nectar we cannot partake alone. Friends and brothers have to join us. The more, the better. It is Sai Baba himself who inspires these stories and gets them written as he desires. Our duty is to surrender completely to him and meditate on him. Practicing penance is better than pilgrimage, vow, sacrifice and charity. Worshipping Hari is better than penance, and meditation on the Sadguru is the best of all. We have therefore to chant Sai's name, think over his sayings in our mind, meditate on his form, feel true love for him in our heart and do all our actions for his sake. There is no better means than this for snapping the bondage of this samsara. If we can do our duty on our part as stated above, Sai is bound to help and liberate us. Now, we revert to the stories of this chapter. Hari Kanoba. A gentleman of Mumbai named Hari Kanoba heard from his friends and relatives many leelas of Baba. He did not believe in them, as if he had a doubting mind. He wanted to see Baba himself. So he came to Shirdi with some Mumbai friends. He wore a lace-bordered turban on his head and a new pair of sandals on his feet. On seeing Baba from a distance, he thought of going to him and prostrating himself before him. He did not know what to do about his new sandals. After going to some corner in the open courtyard, he placed them there and went in the masjid and had Baba's darshan. He made a reverential bow to Baba, took udi and prasad from Baba and returned. When he reached the corner, he found to his utter dismay that his sandals had disappeared. He searched for them in vain and returned to his lodging very much dejected. He bathed, offered worship and Naivedya, and sat down for meals. But all this while he was thinking about nothing but his sandals. After finishing his meals, he came out to wash his hands, when he saw a Maratha boy coming towards him. He had in his hand a stick, at the end of which was hanging a pair of new sandals. He said to the man who had come out to wash the hands that Baba sent him with this stick in hand, and asked him to go on the streets crying, "Hari ka beta, Jari ka feta," and that if anybody claims these sandals, first assure yourself that his name is Hari and that he is the son of Ka, that is Kanoba, and that he wears a lace-bordered turban, and then give them over to him. On hearing this, Hari Kanoba was pleasantly surprised. He went ahead to the boy and claimed the sandals as his own. He said to the boy that his name was Hari and that he was a son of Ka, Kanoba, and showed him his lace-bordered turban. The boy was satisfied and returned the sandals to him. Hari Kanoba wondered in his mind that his lace-bordered turban was visible to all and Baba might have seen it. But how could he know that his name was Hari and that he was a son of Kanoba, as this was his first trip to Shirdi? He came there with the sole object of testing Baba and with no other motive. He came to know by this incident that Baba was a great Satpurush. He got what he wanted and returned home well pleased. Somdev Swami. Now hear the story of another man who came to try Baba. Bhaiji, brother of Kaka Sahib Dixit, was staying at Nagpur. When he had gone to the Himalayas in 1906, he made an acquaintance with one Somdev Swami of Haridwar at Uttarkashi, down the Gangotri Valley. Both took down each other's names in their diaries. 5 years later, Swami came to Nagpur and was Bhaiji's guest. There he was pleased to hear the leelas of Baba, and a strong desire arose in his mind to go to Shirdi and see him. He got a letter of introduction from Bhaiji and left for Shirdi. After passing Manmad and Kopargaon, he took a tonga and drove to Shirdi. As he came near Shirdi, he saw two flags floating high over the masjid in Shirdi. Generally, we find different behavior, different mode of living, and different outward paraphernalia with different saints. But these outward signs should never be our standards to judge the worth of a saint. But with Somdev Swami, it was different. As soon as he saw the flags flying, he thought, why should a saint take a liking for the flags? Does this denote sainthood? It implies the saint's hankering after fame. Thinking thus, he wished to cancel his Shirdi trip and said to his fellow travelers that he would go back. They said to him, then why did you come so far? If your mind became restless by the mere sight of the flags, how much more agitated would you be on seeing the rath, the palanquin, the horse, and other paraphernalia in Shirdi? The Swami got more confounded and said, not such sadhus with horses, palanquins, and tom-toms have I seen, and it is better for me to return than visit such sadhus. After saying this, he started to return. The fellow travelers pressed him not to do so, but to proceed. They asked him to stop his inconsistent way of thinking and told him that the sadhu, that is Baba, did not care a bit for the flags and other paraphernalia. It was the people, his devotees, that kept all this up out of love and devotion to him. Finally, he was persuaded to continue his journey, go to Shirdi and see Baba. When he went and saw Baba from the courtyard, he melted inside. His eyes were full of tears. His throat was choked, and all his evil and crooked thoughts vanished. He remembered his guru saying that is our abode and place of rest, where the mind is most pleased and settled. He wished to roll himself in the dust of Baba's feet, and when he approached Baba, the latter got wild and cried aloud, let all a humbug be with us. You go back to your home. Beware. If you come back to the masjid again, why take the darshan of one who flies a flag over his masjid? Is this a sign of sainthood? Remain here not a moment. The Swami was taken aback by surprise. He realized that Baba read his heart and spoke it out. How omniscient he was. He knew that he was least intelligent and that Baba was noble and pure. He saw Baba embracing somebody, touching someone with his hand, comforting others, staring kindly at some, laughing at others, giving Odi Prasad to some, and thus pleasing and satisfying all. Why should he alone be dealt so harshly? After thinking seriously, he came to realize that Baba's conduct responded exactly to his inner thought, and that he should take a lesson from this and improve, and that Baba's wrath was a blessing in disguise. It is needless to say that later on, his faith in Baba was confirmed and he became a staunch devotee of Baba. Nana Sahib Chandorkar. Hemad Pant concludes this chapter with a story of Nana Sahib Chandorkar. When Nana Sahib was once sitting in the masjid with Mahal Sapati and others, a Muslim gentleman from Bijapur came with his family to see Baba. On seeing veiled ladies with him, Nana Sahib wanted to go away, but Baba prevented him from doing so. The ladies came and took the darshan of Baba. When one of the ladies removed her veil in saluting Baba's feet, Nana Sahib, who had a glimpse of her face, was so much smitten with her beauty that he wished to see her face again. By knowing Nana's restlessness of mind, Baba spoke to him after the lady had left the place. Nana, why are you getting agitated in vain? Let the senses do their allotted work or duty. We should not meddle with their work. God has created this beautiful world, and it is our duty to appreciate its beauty. The mind will get steady and calm slowly. When the front door was open, why go by the back one? When the heart is pure, there is no difficulty whatsoever. Why should one be afraid of anyone if there be no evil thought in us? Their eyes may do their work. Why should you feel shy and tottering? Shama was there, and he could not follow the meaning of what Baba said. So he asked Nana about this on their way home. Nana told him about his restlessness at the sight of the beautiful lady, how Baba knew it and advised him about it. Nana explained Baba's meaning as follows, that a mind is fickle by nature. It should not be allowed to get wild. The senses may get restless. The body, however, should be held in check and not allowed to be impatient. Senses run after objects of desire, but we should not follow them and crave for them. By slow and gradual practice, restlessness can be conquered. We should not be swayed by the senses, though they cannot be completely controlled. We should curb them rightly and properly, according to the need of the occasion. Beauty is a subject of sight. We may fearlessly look at the beauty of objects. There is no room for shyness or fear. Only, we should never entertain evil thoughts. Making the mind desireless, observe God's work of beauty. In this way, the senses will be easily and naturally controlled, and even in enjoying objects, you will be reminded of God. If the outer senses are held in check, and if the mind be allowed to run after objects and be attached to them, our cycle of births and deaths will not come to an end. With Vivek or discrimination as a charioteer, we will control the mind and shall not allow the senses to go astray. With such a charioteer, we reach the Vishnupada, the final abode, our real home, from where there is no return. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 50. Stories of Kaka Sahib Dixit, Sri Tembe Swami, Balaram Dhurandar. Chapter 50 of the original Sai Satcharitra has been incorporated in Chapter 39 as it dealt with the same subject matter. Now, Chapter 51 of the Satcharitra has been treated here as Chapter 50. This chapter gives the stories of Kaka Sahib Dixit, Sri Tembe Swami and Balaram Dhurandar. Preliminary. Victory be unto Sai, who is the mainstay of the Bhaktas, who is a Sadguru, who expounds the meaning of the Gita, and who gives us all powers. O Sai, look favorably on us and bless us all. The sandalwood trees grow on the Malaya mountains and ward off heat. The clouds pour the rain water and thereby cool and refresh all the people. The flowers blossom in the spring and enable us to worship God. So the stories of Sai Baba come forth in order to give solace and comfort to the readers. Both those who tell and those who hear the stories of Baba are blessed and holy. It is a well-established fact that though we try hundreds of means of sadhanas, we do not attain the spiritual goal of life unless a Sadguru blesses us with his grace. Hear the following story in illustration of this statement. Kaka Sahib Dixit, 1864-1926. Mr. Hari Sita Ram, alias Kaka Sahib Dixit, was born in 1864 in Badnagara Nagar in a Brahmin family at Khandwa. His primary education was done at Khandwa, Hingan Ghat, and secondary education at Nagpur. He came to Mumbai for higher education and studied first in Wilson College and then in Elphinstone College. After graduation in 1883, he passed his LLB and solicitor's examinations and then served in the firm of the government solicitors Messrs. Little and Co. and then, after some time, started a solicitor's firm on his own. Before 1909, Sai Baba's name was not familiar to Kaka Sahib, but after that he soon became his great devotee. While he was staying at Lonavala, he happened to see his old friend Mr. Nana Sahib Chandorkar. Both spent some time in talking about many things. Kaka Sahib described to him how, while he was boarding a train in London, he met with an accident in which his foot slipped and was injured. Hundreds of remedies gave him no relief. Nana Sahib then told him that if he wished to get rid of the pain and lameness of his leg, he should go to his Sadguru Sai Baba. He also gave him all the particulars of Sai Baba and mentioned to him Sai Baba's dictum, "I draw to me my man from from far off or even across the seven seas like a sparrow with a string fastened to its feet. He also made it clear to him that if he was not Baba's man, he would not be attracted to him and given darshan. Kaka Sahib was pleased to hear all this and said to Nana Sahib that he would go to Baba, see him and pray to him to cure not so much his lame leg, but bring around his lame, fickle mind and give him eternal bliss. Sometime later, Kaka Sahib went to Ahmednagar and stayed with Sardar Kaka Sahib Mirikar in connection with securing votes for a seat in the Mumbai Legislative Council. Mr. Bala Sahib Mirikar, son of Kaka Sahib Mirikar, who was a Mamlatdar of Kopargaon, also came at that time to Ahmednagar in connection with a horse exhibition there. After the election business was over, Kaka Sahib Dixit wanted to go to Shirdi, and both the Mirikars, father and son, were also thinking about a fit and proper person as a guide with whom he should be sent there. There, Sai Baba was arranging things for his reception. Shama got a telegram from his father-in-law at Ahmednagar stating that his wife was seriously ill and that he should come to see her with his wife. Shama, with Baba's permission, went there and saw his mother-in-law and found her improving and better. Nana Sahib Panse and Appa Sahib Gadri happened to see Shama on their way to the exhibition, and they told him to go to Mirikar's house, see Kaka Sahib Dixit there and take him to Shirdi along with him. Kaka Sahib Dixit and the Mirikars were also informed of Shama's arrival. In the evening, Shama came to the Mirikars, who introduced him to Kaka Sahib. They arranged that Shama should leave for Kopargaon with Kaka Sahib by the 10 o'clock night train. After this was settled, a curious thing happened. Bala Sahib Mirikar threw aside the veil or covering on Baba's big portrait and showed the same to Kaka Sahib. He was surprised to see that he, whom he was going to meet at Shirdi, was already there in the form of his portrait to greet him at this juncture. He was much moved and made his prostration before the portrait. This portrait belonged to Megha. The glass over it was broken and it was sent to Mirikars for repairs. The necessary repairs had been already made and it was decided to return the portrait with Kaka Sahib and Shama. Before 10 o'clock, they went to the station and booked their passage. But when the train arrived, they found that the second class was overcrowded and there was no room for them. Fortunately, the guard of the train turned out to be an acquaintance of Kaka Sahib, and he put them up in the first class. Thus, they travelled comfortably and alighted at Kopargaon. Their joy knew no bounds when they saw their Nana Sahib Chandorkar, who was also bound for Shirdi. Kaka Sahib and Nana Sahib embraced each other, and then, after bathing in the sacred Godavari River, they started for Shirdi. After coming there and getting Baba's darshan, Kaka Sahib's mind was melted, his eyes were full of tears, and he was overflowing with joy. Baba said to him that he was also waiting for him and had sent Shama ahead to receive him. Kaka Sahib then passed many happy years in Baba's company. He built a wada in Shirdi, which he made as his, more or less, the permanent home. The experiences he got from Baba are so many that it is not possible to relate them all here. The readers are advised to read a special Kaka Sahib Dixit number of Sri Sai Leela magazine, volume 12, number 6-9. We close this account with a mention of one fact only. Baba had comforted him, saying that in the end he would take him in air coach or Viman, that is, secure him a happy death. This came out true. On 5th July 1926, Kaka Sahib was travelling in the train with Hemad Pant and talking about Sai Baba. He seemed deeply engrossed in Sai Baba. All of a sudden, he threw his neck on Hemad Pant's shoulder and breathed his last with no trace of pain and uneasiness. Sri Tembe Swami. We come to the next story, which shows how saints love each other with fraternal affection. Once, Sri Vasudevanand Saraswati, known as Sri Tembe Swami, encamped at Rajahmundry in Andhra, on the banks of the Godavari. He was devout, orthodox, dhyani, and yogi bhakt of Dattatreya. One Mr. Pundalik Rao, pleader of Nanded, went to see him with some friends. While they were talking with him, the names of Shirdi and Sai Baba were casually mentioned. Hearing Baba's name, the Swami joined hands with reverence and, taking a coconut, gave it to Pundalik Rao and said to him, "Offer this to my brother Sai with my pranam and request him not to forget me but to ever love me." He also added that Swamis do not generally bow to others, but in this case an exception had to be made. Mr. Pundalik Rao consented to take the coconut and his message to Baba. The Swami was right in calling Baba a brother, for as he maintained an Agnihotra day and night in his orthodox fashion, Baba too kept his Agnihotra dhuni ever burning in the masjid. After 1 month, Pundalik Rao and others left for Shirdi with the coconut and reached Manmad, and as they felt thirsty, they went to a rivulet for drinking water. As water should not be drunk on an empty stomach, they took out some refreshment, that is chivda, flattened rice mixed with spice. The chivda tasted most pungent, and in order to soften it, as someone suggested, broke the coconut and mixed its scrapings with it. Thus, they made the chivda more tasty and palatable. Unfortunately, the coconut turned out to be the same that was entrusted to Pundalik Rao. As they neared Shirdi, Pundalik Rao remembered the trust, that is the coconut, and was very sorry to learn that it was broken and consumed. He came to Shirdi and saw Baba. Baba had already received a wireless message regarding the coconut from the Tembe Swami, and himself asked Pundalik Rao first to give the thing sent by his brother. Pundalik Rao held fast Baba's feet, confessed his guilt and negligence, repented and asked for Baba's pardon. He offered to give another fruit as a substitute, but Baba refused to accept it, saying that the worth of the coconut was far more than an ordinary one and that it could not be replaced by another. Baba also added, "Now you need not worry yourself any more about the matter. It was on account of my wish that the coconut was entrusted to you and ultimately broken on the way. Why should you take the responsibility of the actions on you? Do not entertain the sense of doership in doing good as well as for bad deeds. Be entirely prideless and egoless in all things, and then your spiritual progress will be rapid." What a beautiful spiritual instruction Baba gave. Balaram Dhurandhar, 1878-1925. Mr. Balaram Dhurandhar belonged to the Pathare Prabhu community of Santa Cruz, Mumbai. He was an advocate of the Mumbai High Court and sometime principal of the Government Law School, Mumbai. The whole Dhurandhar family was pious and religious. Mr. Balaram served his community and wrote and published an account of it. He then turned his attention to spiritual and religious matters. He studied carefully Gita and its commentary, Dhyaneshwari, and other philosophical and metaphysical works. He was a devotee of Vithoba of Pandharpur. He came in contact with Sai Baba in 1912. 6 months earlier, his brothers Babuji and Vaman Rao came to Shirdi and took Baba's darshan. They returned home and mentioned their sweet experiences to Balaram and other members. Then they all decided to see Sai Baba. Before they came to Shirdi, Baba said openly, "Today many of my Darbar people are coming." The Dhurandhar brothers were astonished to hear this remark of Baba from the others, as they had not given any previous intimation of their trip. All other people prostrated themselves before Baba and sat talking with him. Baba said to them, "These are my Darbar people whom I referred to before," and said to the Dhurandhar brothers, We are acquainted with each other for the last 60 generations. All the brothers were gentle and modest. They stood with joined hands, looking at Baba's feet. All the sattvic emotions, such as tears, horripilation, choking, etc., moved them, and they were all very happy. Then they went to the lodging, took their meals, and after taking a little rest, again came back to the masjid. Balram sat near Baba, massaging his legs. Baba, who was smoking the chillum, advanced it towards him and beckoned him to smoke it. Balram was not accustomed to smoking. Still, he accepted the pipe, smoked it with great difficulty, and returned it reverentially. This was a most auspicious moment for Balram. He was suffering from asthma for 6 years. The smoke completely cured him of the disease, which never troubled him again. Some 6 years later, on a particular day, he again got an attack of asthma. This was precisely the time when Baba took his Mahasamadhi. The day of this visit was a Thursday, and the Dhurandhar brothers had the good fortune of witnessing the Chavadi procession that night. At the Aarti function in the Chavadi, Balaram saw the glow of Pandurangan Baba's face, and the next morning at the Kakar Aarti time, the same phenomenon, the same luster of the beloved deity Pandurang was visible again on Baba's face. Mr. Balaram Dhurandhar wrote in Marathi the life of the Maharashtra Saint Tukaram, but he did not survive to see its publication. It was published later on by his brothers in 1928. In a short note on Balaram's life given in the beginning of the book, the above account of Balaram's visit has been fully corroborated. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Epilogue. We have done with chapter 51, and now we come to the last chapter, number 52 in the original. In this, Hemant Pant gives his concluding remarks and promised to give an index giving the contents of all the chapters in verse as is given in Marathi sacred books. But unfortunately, that index was not found in Hemant Pant's papers. It was therefore composed and supplied by an able and worthy devotee of Sai Baba, Mr. B.V. Dev. As we give in English books an index in the beginning and contents of each chapter at its top, we need not consider the last chapter as index here, and so we consider this chapter as the epilogue. Unfortunately, Hemant Pant did not survive to revise the manuscript of this chapter and make it ready for the press. When it was sent to the press, Mr. Dev found it to be incomplete and unintelligible in certain places, but it had to be published as it was. The main topics dealt with are given below briefly. Greatness of Sadguru Sai. We prostrate ourselves before and take refuge in that Sai Samarth, who besets all animate and inanimate things in the universe, who pervades all creatures equally without any differentiation, to whom all devotees are alike, and who knows not honor and dishonor, like or dislike. If we remember him and surrender to him, he fulfills all our wishes and makes us attain the goal of life. This ocean of mundane existence is very hard to cross. Waves of attachments beat high against the bank of bad thoughts and break down trees of fortitude. The breeze of egoism blows with force and makes the ocean rough and agitated. Crocodiles in the form of anger and hatred move there fearlessly. Eddies in the form of the idea, I and mine, and other doubts whirl there incessantly. And innumerable fissures in the form of censure, hate and jealousy play there. Though this ocean is so fierce and terrible, Sadguru Sai is its Agasthi, destroyer, and the devotees of Sai have the least fear of it. Our Sadguru is the boat which will safely take us across this ocean. Prayer. Now we fall before Sai Baba and, holding his feet, make the following prayer for the public. Let not our mind wander and desire anything except thee. let this work, Sai Sat Charitra, be in every house, and let it be studied daily. Let it ward off the calamities of those who study it regularly with reverence. Phalashruti, reward of study. Now a few words about the reward you get from this work. After bathing in the sacred Godavari, and after taking the darshan of the Samadhi in the Samadhi Mandir at Shirdi, you should read or hear the Sai Sat Charitra. If you do this, all your threefold afflictions will vanish. Casually thinking about the stories of Sai, you will get interested in spiritual life. And if you go through it with love and reverence, all your sins will be destroyed. If you wish to get rid of the cycle of births and deaths, read Sai's stories and remember him always and get yourself devoted to his feet. If you dive into the sea of Sai's stories and then give them out to others, you will get an ever new flavor of them and save the hearers from future misery. If you go on meditating on Sai's form, it will, in course of time, lead you into self-realization. It is very hard to know or realize the nature of self or Brahma, but if you approach through the Sagun Brahma, Sai's form, your progress will be easy. If the devotee completely surrenders himself to him, he will lose his individual ego and be merged in him and be one with him, as a river becomes one with the sea. If you thus become merged with him in any of the three states, that is waking, dream and sleep, you get rid of the bond of samsara. If anybody, after bathing, reads this with love and faith and completes it within a week, his calamities will disappear. Or if he hears or reads it daily and regularly, all his dangers will be warded off. He will get the reward according to his faith and devotion. Without these, there will be no experience of any kind. If you read this with reverence, Sai will be pleased, and by removing your ignorance and poverty, will give you knowledge, wealth and prosperity. With concentrated mind, if you read a chapter daily, it will give you unbounded happiness. One who has his own welfare at heart should study it carefully, and then he will ever remember Sai gratefully and joyfully in birth after birth. This work should be read at home, especially on Guru Purnima, Gokulashtami, Ram Navami and Dasara, Baba's Punyatithi. If you study this one book carefully, all your desires will be satisfied. And if you always remember Sai's feet in your heart, you will easily cross the Bhavasagar. By its study, the diseased and sick will get health, the poor wealth, the mean and afflicted the prosperity, and the mind will get rid of all futile ideas and get steadiness. Dear devoted readers and listeners, we also bow to you all and make a special request. Never forget him whose stories you have read day by day or month by month. The more fervently you read or listen to these stories, the more encouragement Sai gives us to serve you and be of use to you. Both the author and the readers must cooperate in this work, help each other and be happy. Prasad Yachana. We close this with a prayer to the Almighty for the following prasad of favor. May the readers and devotees get complete and wholehearted devotion to Sai's feet. May his form be ever fixed in their eyes, and may they see Sai the Lord in all beings. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all.
Sai Baba, Sai Baba, Shri Guru Sai Baba.
Sai Baba, Sai Baba, Satguru Shirdi Baba.
ಮಂಗಳಗಿರಿಧರ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಮಂಗಳಗಿರಿಧರ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಪೂರ್ಣ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಪೂರ್ಣ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಕರುಣಾ ಸಾಗರ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ, ನಿರಂಜನ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ನಿರಂಜನ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ, ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ,
ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ ಸಾಯಿ ಬಾಬಾ, ಸದ್ಗುರು ಶಿರಡಿ ಬಾಬಾ.
Thank you. to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity. Under the spotlight today is Professor M. Nanjundaya, who is in conversation with Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. Today, we bring you the conclusion of this six-part interview. Sairam.
Very interesting. So all this must, these close encounters, continuous interaction with Swami, the ability to translate his discourses, this must have led to a lot of practical learning.
Oh yes, oh yes. Practical learning very much. See, many a time, our literal knowing, that is the meaning of the literal meaning of what he says, we think that we have understood and we are following, which is not true. I have learnt a number of times, he will be talking about things which have special reference to me and relevance to me, but they are applicable to all people. So, quite a few things like that.
For example, what?
Yes, for example, Swami would say, people think that Sai Baba would be happy if people give their time or their attention, as if I want their time and their attention. They do part-time service and expect full-time salary. They must give their heart fully to me. Then they can expect that kind of attention from me. For example, people go on drawing upon my kindness. They ask, Swami, I want this, I want this. I grant. When I grant, sometimes it amounts to exhausting the merits of their activity. Suddenly, there may not be response from me. I am always perfect. I will never lapse or never falter anywhere. And people should know that Swami doesn't want anything. And many a time, if they are clever people, they think that Swami is putting these things very cleverly. I speak only truth. I never speak anything which is untrue. But I may focus sometimes on certain points and sometimes to certain other points. Why should there be this kind of contradictions in Swami? For example, Swami speaks to people who do not have such good reputation. And Swami said, well, I do it because I have come for them.
For example, throughout Swami's life, we saw him give a lot of attention to Indian politicians.
Yes.
And we have never seen anything good come out of them.
Yes. But then Swami says that if I change them, so much of change, so much of good can be done to the society. So my efforts are when they come with love, when they are in a mood to receive. If they don't receive, I don't regret. My job is to give. My job is to show them the way. Whether they follow, if they follow, they benefit. If they don't follow, there is no harm. But certainly there will be an improvement. At that point of time, they may not realize. It starts working in them.
Like a subtle transformation.
Yes, subtle
transformation
will be taking place. And they develop gratitude to me. And that gratitude turns into devotion. So I do it. And another thing is, one of the reasons as to why I have come down is to be a refuge for people who do not have anyone to support them, people who are helplessly caught up in the cycle of birth and death. For example, buddhi karmanusarini. Our intelligence works always according to the deeds which we have done. If in the previous birth we have done evil deeds, in this birth the mind goes towards the evil deeds only because of that habit which has become a samskara, which has become character and destiny. Now such people find helpless. Whom to turn to? Who will help them?
Because they have this compulsion, this tendency towards negative.
Sometimes they realize the family suffers on account of such things. They also suffer. So suddenly they realize. But they want to change. They cannot give up. They have become victims. They have become addicts. Addicted to things. So once they come and say, నీ వాడని ఒక పరియన ఏవాడైన నేమి ఏలుదు అని. హూ ఎవర్ హీ బీ, ఇఫ్ హీ వర్ టు కమ్ అండ్ ఫాల్ అట్ మై ఫీట్ అండ్ సే, స్వామి ఐఎమ్ యువర్స్, ఐ హ్యావ్ సరెండర్డ్ మై సెల్ఫ్, ప్లీజ్ సేవ్ మీ, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ ఎలిజిబిలిటీ, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ క్వాలిఫికేషన్స్, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ బ్యాంక్ బ్యాలెన్స్, I just accept him on the basis of his surrendering to me. Okay. And it is one of my avataric duties. Among avataric duties, to save any person who is caught up in the vicious circle of evil thinking, evil doing, and evil samskaras, evil character, evil destiny, again that prompts him to do evil things. So he has said that. And he has said, prayer is a very powerful thing. How many times I have translated for that? For example, true devotion is to maintain equanimity, which comes once he transcends the stage of duality. But one need not be afraid of he is not having equanimity. He should start doing. You need not say, I don't have that equanimity.
So, if I may interrupt here, earlier you said that Swami said, when we do a little bit of seva, we accumulate some good karma, then we ask him, we force him, you know, do something for me, and we exhaust that bank balance. After that, he may or may not respond because we have run out of the balance.
Yes.
And then he also said that, regardless of whether we have a balance or not,
yes,
if we seek refuge in his lotus feet,
yes,
he's not going to check our bank balance or eligibility.
Yes.
He will rescue us. Yes. So these are two slightly divergent narratives.
No, the thing is, it depends upon the prayer. It depends upon, suppose you don't have any balance.
Yes.
For the first time you are coming, somehow it occurs to you that he will rescue you.
Mm-hmm.
You surrender to him.
So surrender is the key.
Yes, surrender is the key. Intensity is a very important thing. Surrender is the key. Manas yekam, vachas yekam, karman yekam. These are the three important things. What I mean is,
with mind,
yes,
body,
your
and
thought, word and deed must
surrender.
Be the same. Thought, word and deed must be the same. Genuinely you should surrender. You should not be pretense. You should not be business. You should not be half-hearted.
Okay, then you also spoke of, Swami said we should have equanimity.
Yes.
Now, sometimes in life you deal with very irksome people. Either they don't share your vision or your thought process, or they're at a very different vibrational level.
Yes, yes.
And they only seem to bring difficulties or irritations into your life.
Yes.
How do you remain equanimous in the presence of such people?
See, here equanimity is not forcing ourselves to be kind to a person who is not good. That's good enough. If you can control your mind and accept the evil of the other person, go a little out of the way and help him. That's good as far as you can. But real equanimity is transcending the pull of this dvaita. It is a very high level kind of devotion. That is almost you are a gnani. Your stability, mental stability is not temporary. You have realized soul. Nothing can, your vision is pure. Your new vision is perfect.
But then you can't, then if you are in such a state at that level, and you see atrocities or adharma happening around you, if you don't react to it, again, you're not following the law, isn't it?
It's correct. You have to, for example, Bhishma in the court, when such injustice was done to Pandavas, when he kept quiet, that was a sin. But then, he is not that, he doesn't have equanimity in the sense that Swami uses the word. Equanimity is samatvam. Samatvam comes only when you can see one God all around. You don't see the bodies. It is a vast sheet of divinity. You see only divine. It is an experience more than thing. So, once you reach a stage wherein this dvaita to advaita, advaita means seeing the same Atma in all people, seeing Swami in all people, these are all very, very difficult things for a beginner. That's why Swami doesn't speak about these things very elaborately, but suggestively he tells and he goes by. People, yes.
I'm just curious to know, in the Mahabharata, what should Bhishma have done?
Bhishma should have protested.
But then he was not practicing equanimity.
That is the reason why he should have protested. If he was keeping quiet.
Protesting would have been equivalent to equanimity?
No. Protesting is appropriate to a person who has not reached a stage of equanimity.
Oh, I see.
Equanimity is a stage beyond that.
So what does a person of equanimity see? He sees that, let the wrongdoer do what he's doing because his karma will catch up with him. But what if you're a victim of their wrongdoing?
No, the thing is, when we are in dvaita, we have to observe certain rules. We have to discharge our duties. Indifference is not detachment.
Well said, yes.
You see, if you say, well, let anything happen, why does it matter, it is not happening to me, it is not detachment. It is realizing oneness. And in that atmic spirit, it is the mind functioning. So it is a very difficult stage as such. I am not able to just say what I say, at least this much. That as a person now, even at the cost of being mistaken, or even at the cost of being held responsible, being put to difficulties and troubles, I must discharge my duties. This is dvaita. It is only a gnani like Shuka who has reached that stage.
So if you are at the state of advaita, then what would you do in face of all these things?
Advaita, you see something like a drama. It's not real happening. It is something like a dream. See, your dream is not real. Once you are awakened, you realize, you laugh at that particular thing. Now, similarly, from the worldly stage, a stage of awakening wherein you have realized, that becomes awakening. That is, this is a dream, this is a daydream. When will the daydream stop? When will the night dream stop? Night dream stops once you are awakened from the sleep. Daydream stops once you are awakened into realizing the reality. And once you do that, then you can do it, but still with the same, your dream is continuing. And you cannot imagine yourself to be out of dream, out of sleep. That is where Swami is, the most important function of Swami is Guru, Sadguru, Prabodha. Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, he said. Every day, thrice we say, O Narayana Narayana, Om Satya Narayana Narayana, Jai Sadguru Deva, Guru Charanam Buddha. That is, even in Suprabhatam we say, Mangalam Guru Devaya, Mangalam Gnanadayini. Because the greatest thing which Swami can do is to save us from the ignorance, to remove the darkness. Death is sweeter than, Swami says, the darkness of ignorance. Ignorance is so powerful. It's catching us. But it is possible. The whole journey, the whole drama, worldly drama, is carried on because of this sleep, this dream, this, it continues. I don't know how...
Very interesting. A lot of food for thought there.
Yes. So Swami would say in his discourses, most of the time, he is interested in acting, practicing, rather than listening, appreciating, things like that. I have seen. Swami's discourse is over. He goes into the drawing room. Students and others surround him. One person is overwhelmed by the subtleties of the philosophy and spirituality which has brought about in his discourse. He is a competent person. He praises Swami. But Swami says, simple, practice. You must practice. Because he is not practicing.
It's one thing to appreciate it at an intellectual level, I guess.
Yes.
Another to actually internalize it.
Yes.
That's the hard part.
Yes. See, he, not understanding even intellectually is much inferior to understanding intellectually.
I understand.
But understanding intellectually is not the end of the journey. From there, it must become a deep conviction. The conviction must be so deep that even if any person pushes you into the fire, you'll come back and say, I'm going to die. How can I put my hand into the fire? So spontaneous implementing Swami's commands, Swami's sayings, Swami's teachings is the ultimate proof of you are having understood it. But Swami doesn't expect overnight that. Swami has infinite patience. Infinite patience. And all that is required is, from the heart if you feel and say anything, however wrong, however unacceptable, however, you know, defective, he has patience. He may not agree with you for all your lies, for all your wrong path, but then he has patience. He knows how to lift you to a next higher stage.
But there were times when we observed that people who were close to him and moving very in his physical proximity, Swami would at least feign that he was upset with them.
Yes. I'll tell you one thing. With Swami, this human aspect and the divine aspect,
yes, how do you...
are two very, very... powerful things which can confuse us, which can confound, and which can sometimes even make us fall. For example, there were some students of mine. Swami would not encourage people to grow long hair, etc. There was one student of mine who was very close to Swami. Swami would not ask him to cut his hair. He will allow that. This is a small example I am telling. So suppose I am a corrupt fellow. I am carrying on my corruption. But I come to Swami, Saru Swami, I love Swami and all that. For Swami that is sufficient. Your love is sufficient. You carry on your corruption.
How can you say that? The person is living a life of adharma.
Not adharma. Swami will save you. But he has patience.
What if you don't change? You want both. You want to have the ability to sit in the veranda.
But this cannot continue. There is a time given. Some adjustment time is given. At the appropriate level, he lifts you up.
Or you fall off the bandwagon.
Afterwards, he will not talk to you. That's all. He will say it is a waste. My investment is not getting rewards. Swami is one of the best investors. He is one of the wonderful marketing men. His salesmanship and his this kind of thing. So he would not waste. The thing that is where it is one-to-one with Swami. One-to-one with Swami. You cannot understand all the aspects of Swami.
Yes, and especially the one that you mentioned, one size didn't fit all. For example, somebody could get away with long hair, although Swami was very particular that gentlemen should have well-trimmed hair.
Yes.
But somebody else could have the license to grow a ponytail also.
Yes, that is where. See, we human nature is to compare. We always say that that fellow is doing like this fellow is doing like that. See, one IAS officer's daughter cut her hair. Swami went for darshan. He saw. Swami became very angry with him. He said, has your daughter become a widow? Why should she cut the hair? But so many people with Swami will be speaking so profusely, so lovingly, and he gives so much of attention.
To ladies with short hair also.
So short hair also. So what I am telling is, you see, one to one you have to take, Swami. And if you don't understand, the only way to understand it is by your own straining, by your own putting it into your mind and your intellect and doing it. But not accepting anyone, accepting Swami. The correct meaning, correct state he will understand. Now, I don't understand, but I think that I am wrong. I am feeling desperate. Have patience. Have faith in Swami. Swami will save you. However wicked you are not beyond Swami's capacity to save. But what should we have? Patience. Cling on. Cling on, cling on. One of the greatest things which one should remember is to cling on to the lotus feet at any cost. The real devotion is that. That kind of unwavering thing. You are not a fair weather friend. Your commitment is not that kind of thing. As long, oh, Swami has given me amrutam. Swami has done this, done that. When things are going on. When Swami lifts you and puts you into a higher class, wherein different tests come and you are not able to read. What is Swami is not looking after? One IAS person was telling me, when I was the chief secretary, when I came, Swami would spend so much of time with us, but now I have joined here. I am serving for the past 2 years. Swami even doesn't look at me sometime. See, at what stage what is good is Swami knows. At what stage you are, what is good for you. So, one should never be in a hurry to draw conclusions. This is the context in which Swami told me, Nannu artham cheskone daniki prayatnam cheyavaddu. Don't try to understand me. Enjoy experience. Enjoy and experience can come only when you have faith. Unwavering faith. You can have unwavering faith only if you have patience. And faith builds itself. Faith gives you experience, sustains you. Otherwise, it is very difficult. Many a time, we are in a hurry.
But you talk of faith being so critical to spiritual progress.
Yes.
Now, that also has to come from God, because what comes first? It's like the chicken or the egg. Do you make the effort to develop faith, or does God have to bestow you with it?
No, it is a very, not such a simple straight answer cannot be given. For example,
yes.
X has done so many mistakes. Consequently, he is suffering. His suffering wants some relief. He comes to Swami for relief. And he gets relief. He develops that kind of thing that Swami is really God, otherwise how would he? Then that gratitude becomes faith.
But there are some people, and there are millions to come, who would never have had direct contact with Swami to have developed, okay, I came with the problem, Swami solved it, he cured the cancer, he, you know, gave me a child I didn't have or whatever, and that's how he's God and I developed the faith. Or my business started to progress because Swami gave me some guidance. Now, apart from that, there are people who come to him as seekers, and
yes,
they are looking for faith.
Yes.
What's a good starting point, in your opinion?
See, that seeker has reached a particular stage. Otherwise, you would never be a seeker. Seeker, if he is seeking wealth, if seeking relief, he is arthi, artharthi, jignas. Jignas, we are telling. A seeker is one who knows already, who has got some basic things with him. And therefore, he has that faith. He might not have faith in X, he might not have faith in Swami, he has faith in himself, his own intellectual power, his own understanding. And once that conforms, then there will be so much. For example, I came to Swami more as a seeker. I have Bhagavad Gita and Swami's discourses, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's Gospel of Ramakrishna, conformity with these things, all these things have helped me. But then, so this is how it goes.
Sir, in the aftermath of the Mahasamadhi, lot of devotees really miss Swami's physical form because we had an attachment to the form. We have interacted with him in the body. He was so beautiful to behold. How can we not miss it? Actually, some people ask, and they're experiencing a void within them. Now, to fulfill this void, we notice a lot of people continue to come to Prashanthi Nilayam, but they also are visiting a lot of other spiritual spots and holy men and women to sort of find some sort of relief to their pain, because you know, when you touch the feet of a holy person, you feel, okay, I've touched Swami's feet, or you interact with the holy person. What would you say to these people who are now attending all these various spiritual camps and meditation programs at various locations at other spiritual religious places?
My immediate first reaction is that the depth of their faith in Swami was very much less. And they go on shifting. One person digs the well 6 feet, no water, no water here, goes to another 6 feet. But there is a third person who digs 12 feet in the same place, he gets it. That's why faith is not the thing which is an article of bargaining and business. Faith is giving, that's all.
And trusting, I guess.
Complete trust. Faith and trust, patience, these are very, very intimately connected. Patience sustains faith. If you don't have patience, what type of faith is it if, well, nothing happened to me, I have prayed to Swami, I kept Swami gives in the discourses, Rama's photo was kept, Krishna's photo was kept, no response, and ultimately the Agarbatti, it was going towards the
altar,
altar where Devi was there, and this kind of Swami tells all these things.
It's all figment of the mind.
It is exactly, mind is absolute Mahishasura, and it can simply do havoc. Mm-hmm. That is where faith comes to your rescue. Once you have faith in Swami, and once you say that whatever happens, happens for my good, this has come from Swami. My faith is only in one word, that is, I always, nothing is beyond me. Everything is under my control. Everything happens by my will. And nothing will I do which is not good for you. Whatever happens to you happens for your good. Have patience. Bear with me. And you will realize that it will be for your good. Patience is required. Now if you say, no, I cannot wait here, I'll go to some other guru. You may. You may get some relief also. I don't talk adversely against them. Not my business. But I'll certainly say they are unfortunate ones. And they are missing a golden opportunity of getting some light.
The ones who are hopping gurus all the time.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Sir, by the way, do you miss the form?
I miss, but I feel his presence so much. It is an experience. It's not a thing that Vibhuti has come or Kumkum has come or Swami has appeared in my room. Not that kind of thing. At every stage, every minute, I get guidance.
Mm-hmm. What kind of internally prompting, intuition?
Internally prompting.
Did you dream of him? Did you dream of him after Mahasamadhi?
Yes, number of dreams, but then nothing so startling, etc., that kind of thing. But when I go to, I open a book, I get him. You mean to say that I would have spoken here but for his grace? Believe me, that is absolutely 100% his grace, which has made me do my serious work, serious thinking about all these things. So that is how he takes care. I have been given some work. I have not been included in any trust as a very important person. That is not required for me. He knows what he has to give me.
Mm-hmm.
And number of times all these things melt away. I cry like a child when I see in Sai Kulwanthal certain functions, certain bhajans are sung, certain devotees coming and taking photograph along with Mahasamadhi. Mm. And some primary students, etc., showing to the chair what they have done
The cards, so beautiful.
Yeah. See, he is there. But you don't see him. I'm having my cat tracked. Swami told me, the iron filing feels that this magnet doesn't have power at all. Dust and rust is there. Remove the dust and rust. Have the patience. Until then, prayer is your birthright. Pray. You don't pray. You don't look to certain things which are available to you. But you say that this is not available, that is not available. This is all not correct.
Mm-hmm. Sir, are you a contented man?
Yes, I am a contented man. I get a number of problems, very mundane.
How do you process them in light of your contentment? Do they disturb you?
No, I just say, Swami is there, Swami will take care of me, I go on acting, and it, Swami helps me. Swami has helped like that. Regarding the illness of some members of my family, or regarding the marriage, or regarding such things. And so I know that Swami in a convincing way, not to rationalize helplessness. Many a time our mind plays tricks.
Yes, yes.
And it gives a reason, and we based upon that reason we accept. Later on it takes away that reason itself. It reveals another thing. So I should not depend upon that. In a convincing way, Swami tells he has been taking care of me. Fantastic way has taken care of me.
Have you ever wondered if you had not, when you were teaching at a prestigious premier college in Bangalore, and you sought to give all that up and come and live in Whitefield, you were seeking even a part-time position. Have you ever wondered if you hadn't made that call, where your life would have been?
My life would have never been anywhere comparable to the one that I have, because now the greatest thing that I have, the greatest thing that Swami has given me, is that I am basically divine. I do not know at this point all that. I am still under the spell of this Dvaita and Maya. But it may take time. But I definitely know that now, when the problems become crisis, I realize that's all a passing show. He's not a kind of rationalized. The difference, it looks the same as a person who is rationalizing it. But with me, I enjoy peace at heart. There is restlessness for the other person.
You don't have moments of anxiety.
No, no, no. Whatever happens, I say, Swami, you have done it. First thing. Second thing is, you have done it for my good. I know, whether I know, I don't know, I accept it, Swami. And things prove the right. My faith like that has proved right.
So, if Bhagwan was physically here at this moment,
yes,
what would you say to him?
I enjoy. There is nothing excepting joy. Nothing to ask. Nothing, no explanation. I never ask, why have you gone? I never ask, you are 96 years, but you have gone. I never said that you have given up all of us and you have gone. Never. I enjoy. He is with me.
What about this whole industry? There's a whole big school of thought that keeps talking about Bhagwan's return in the same body. What do you think of, what do you make of all that?
Yes. No, I have my own thing. I say, this is my answer. Nothing is impossible for Swami. And he's always perfect. If he wants to come, he will come. And if he's in his understanding, if that is necessary, he will do it. Otherwise, he will not do it. If he does it, I feel delighted. If he doesn't do it, I don't feel disappointed. Because my faith in Swami is total. Whatever he does, when he says, I am perfect, 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 yes, he is always perfect. When he says, I am love, love is my form and all that, this is not simply some kind of exciting, emotional kind of thing. He is love, and love has infinite patience, and always does good, never expects anything from you, not even thanks, not even recognition. I know, I have enjoyed that kind of thing from Swami. How can I say no?
So this has been extremely inspiring, enlightening, listening to you, sir. So if I know this is a tough call, but if you just had to have one or two maybe, brief messages, your final thoughts for the listeners of Radio Sai, what would they be?
My kind of suggestions or what I would like to mention that way is, have faith in Swami. He will never, never give you up. You will never, never be poorer by that. You will be most fortunate if you have that faith in Swami. Don't be in a haste. Hurry never works with Swami. Have complete patience with Swami. Patience and faith if you have. And love. Love is a very big word. And true love for Swami, not expecting anything. Whatever he gives is good. Whatever he doesn't do is good. This is all that I say. And I thank, of course, Bhagavan, who has really made this possible. And my prayer to Bhagavan was, Swami, let the listeners have greater faith in you and let it give them some kind of enlightenment, show light in their journey towards your lotus feet. It should not be boring, should not be hurting, it should not be kind of straining them, but still they should have some kind of light also, Swami. This was my prayer. So I pray to Swami and I thank Swami. I thank you. You have been so nice in making me come out. And I must thank you, Karuna. You are more like a daughter, Sahira.
Pleasure, sir, having you. And thank you for the precious life lessons and very soul edifying messages that you've given us. I have learned so much by just sitting across from you. I'm sure our listeners are going to find a lot of answers, lot of guidance, lot of light from what you have told us. These are reminders we need from time to time. And when they come from a person who speaks from a place of conviction, they carry a lot of weight. So I thank you profusely for sparing us your time.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, sir.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard the conclusion of the 6-part Tryst with Divinity interview with Professor M. Nanjundaya, who was in conversation with Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. We look forward to your feedback to this conversation by email. As always, you may email us to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sairam.
Soham Brahma, soham Vishnu. ध्यान करो
साईं कृष्ण जनार्दन है
सनातन है।